Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, turn this motherfucking shit up. Turn this motherfucking shit up.
To my brother Hugo Pinnell. Hugo Pinnell was in the struggle with Brother George Jackson during the California prison struggle back in the 60s and early 70s when George was killed on August 21st, 1971. Hugo Pinnell was one of the brothers who was with him. And he was basically one of the guys who were charged with killing some of the officers who were supposedly, you know, who were killed that day in the supposed escape attempt. And the name, you know, they named the group of prisoners who had been listed as defendants in that case the San Quentin Six. Hugo Pinnell ultimately was placed in solitary confinement, where he spent the next 43 years before he was released in 2015. And shortly after his release in 2015, on August 12th, he was murdered on a prison yard. And it is said by many people in the California prison system that Hugo was killed as an assassination. Gang members were hired by the state to kill Hugo Pinnell, is what a lot of people who were in the prison at that time are saying. So we want to dedicate this show to Brother Hugo Pinnell, a warrior for justice who is unknown and unheard, but, you know, spent 43 years in solitary confinement as repression for his activism against the racist California police state that exists behind the prison wall. Moving forward into today, like I said before, today's show is going to be about the political prisoner historically and what it means today. I want to start by asking my man Santiago, are you here, man?
Yeah, I'm here. Peace, brother. Peace. What's up?
Peace to you, black man. Peace to you. Yeah, so I'm going to pose the question first, rhetorically. What is a political prisoner? And I will start by adding a quote from Brother George Jackson where he said that anybody in the system who is black, no matter what their crime, is a political prisoner because the system has dealt with them differently. Now, this definition right here is one that most of us today who are in the system in the age of mass incarceration but have become politicized behind the wall. This is the one definition that we oftentimes operate from. Because like George Jackson, who was 18 years old and sent to prison for a robbery, which could be considered a non-political crime, we have come to the prison and become politically educated, politically conscious why it is that, you know, the conditions we come from, or how it is that the conditions we come from has contributed to our criminality. The Amnesty International has moved past the term political prisoner to what they like to call prisoner of conscience. Prisoner of conscience. And they define that as prisoners that have been imprisoned because of their political, religious, or other consciously held beliefs, sex, color, ethnic origin, language, national or social origin, economic status, birth, sexual orientation, or other statuses, provided that they have neither used or advocated violence. And so for Amnesty International, their concern is that those who are incarcerated for or imprisoned for those various categories haven't committed any acts of violence. I slightly feel like, you know, that's a little bit of a liberal definition, because sometimes we know that there are people who are engaged in armed struggle against a repressive state and they get imprisoned and they are political prisoners, you know what I'm saying? Or prisoners of conscience, you know what I mean? But the connection between the two definitions that I just named is that both people, whether you came to prison without ideology and you gained ideology, or whether you had ideology prior to being in prison and you kept ideology while in prison, that is the connection. You have people who have recognized the repressive nature of the state and who have began to move out politically in an attempt to change the conditions, the repressive conditions imposed on us by the state. And so with that being said, I want to kind of start the conversation with you, bro, a little informally. When me and you was back here struggling, man, banging on the cell phone, trying to improve the conditions for prisoners, trying to raise awareness about the repressive conditions that existed in the prison system and the criminal justice system out here in Virginia that was biased, that was unfair, we started a movement called Prison Action Movement. You was very much a part of the Prison Action Movement. You remember that? I just want to know, you know, what do you remember, man, you know, about the Prison Action Movement, for people who may not know that there are various struggles and organizations that are ongoing behind the wall. What do you remember about the Prison Action Movement, bro?
Yeah, peace. What I remember about the Prison Action Movement was it was an isolated battle. It was a battle from the collection of sincere brothers who had compassion, brothers who had ideas and a strong sense of justice to strive to reform and even born awareness to the prisoners as well as to the citizens of the United States and even abroad of the conditions that prisoners were faced with. And more intimately or more directly, black prisoners, but overwhelmingly all the prisoners. But the memories I have from Pam was it was a struggle, and it was directly connected to the struggle that still goes on right now with individuals in the street. But it was just brothers who was conscious or aware of, you know, the justice system, the justice policies, or I should say the injustice policies that we were plagued with and that we still plagued with, and the prison policies that we was plagued with on a daily basis, and just trying to strive to have those situations brought to light and to try to have some remedy for them, you know. And it wasn't easy. You know, it took a lot of footwork. It took a lot of communication. It took a lot of advocating and uplifting and inspiring people to care. You know, people to really to give a damn. You know, amongst all of the distractions that goes on behind prison wall, as well as what goes on in society today. So, really, it was just activists. You know, we were activists who were striving to bring knowledge about a situation. You know, that's my memories, and you know, of Pam. You know what I'm saying?
Peace to
Pat.
No doubt. And the reason why I started off with that conversation a little informally is because, you know, a lot of people who haven't experienced, you know, prison life oftentimes don't know what like back here. And they don't realize that, you know, you're dealing with societies behind the wall, you know, just enclosed societies. And just like you have various social groups out there in the street, you have the same type of social groups, institutions in here. You have education institutions that are provided by the state, but you also have education institutions that the population provides. Informally, with the support of the state, poverty programs, various things, you know what I'm saying, support groups, mentorship. Prison Action Movement was just a way that we got together and organized, like you say, trying to change the conditions of the prison, trying to raise the awareness of the people in society about the unfair treatment of prisoners, and also about the unfair, you know, law, you know, public policy. We felt like 85%, you know what I'm saying, privatization of services, things like that, that we felt like, you know, the public should be interested in because there was an indirect consequence to them. I'm going to switch gears and say a quote by the brother George Jackson, which I think is important, man. You know, he said that growing up in the ghetto, their first act of resistance is always crime. I repeat, for growing up in the ghetto, their first act of resistance is always crime. Now, a lot of people, you know, oftentimes say, you know, we got the new movement, Prison Lives Matter. That's our new attempt to raise the awareness of the people. And oftentimes what people who are supporting us on the street oftentimes tell us is that a lot of people are concerned with the fact that we committed a crime, and it's hard for them to get engaged in a struggle that basically advocates or declares or communicates to the public that prisoners' lives matter. When a lot of the prisoners have involved in violent crimes or crimes against people's property, you know, they've done some pretty tough stuff. So to be out there saying, look, you know, their lives matter, they have a hard time. It's a struggle for their consciousness, you know. But like Brother George said, you know, the first act of resistance is crime. So what I want to ask you, man, you know, what would you tell somebody, you know what I'm saying, who has a problem, who has an issue with trying to support the Prison Lives Matter movement, or any movement for that matter, where the rights of prisoners are being asserted because of the fact that those prisoners have committed a crime, who have genuinely committed a crime. You know what I'm saying? What would you say to that person? Why should they care?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. I would say that they should care when they look at the whole overall view of the situation of the prisoner, or the individual who grows up in an impoverished area, an impoverished community, because George Jackson was right on point when he said that, and it also shines light on the police versus the community mentality or relationship, because we know and understand from a sociological point of view and perspective, as it is set up today, is really to enforce the subjugation or the impoverishment of particular people segregated to a degraded area, and to have them remain basically economic slaves to the system, where their whole inception of education is based on a biased premise where white ideology and white accomplishments is basically promoted and black accomplishments is degraded. And so these people are already brought up with a white superiority education, where they then become self-loathing and self-hated amongst one another, self-hateful amongst one another, and then not having proper economics or money or finances where they are given a fair chance to compete with the rest of the United States as far as the books, the computers, as far as technology, and so they are at a disadvantage. And so then the first act of rebellion is crime, because this is all they know, because the American dream is to get successful. The American dream is to get money. And so if the American dream is to get money and rich and have a house and a dog and the white picket fence, and they have been deprived of that, and the only way they know how to get it is through what's going on in their neighborhood, drugs, guns, you know, manipulation of individuals or human beings, get ahead, dog eat dog, then that's what they do. So this is the first act, because they saying, you know what, I'm not going to be poor, you know, I'm not going to be a nobody, I'm going to get it. Because that's what y'all teaching me to get it. And so we go against ourselves, and that's the first act. We rebel, but the laws, and it's just like slavery, you know what I'm saying? Like, everything going on today should still be related to slavery, because back in the day they said that the law was for individuals to remain enslaved, individuals to serve a so-called master. But that was so individuals say, you know what, man, we escaping because this don't make sense to me. You know what I'm saying? But that was breaking the law, you know, and it's just the same way today. You want me to remain broke. You want me to look at you as a God. You want me to look at you as a supreme being, but I'm broke, you know what I'm saying? But I want what you have, so I'm going to do what I got to do to get what you have. And so they break laws. You know, they sell drugs, or they rob, and they do these things. And so that is the first act of rebellion, coming from a deprived people who haven't been given the fair opportunity to compete, just like the rest of the society, or I should say white society, because you and I don't understand that there's a white America and there's a black America. And the white America, you know, they whistle. They whistle when they go to work. You know, they cheerful. They don't see no problems. But when you take that trip across that color line, across that poverty line, you see a whole different struggle. Singing Negro spirituals when they go to, you know, so it's a whole different reality. But the police represents not a friend. They represent people who come to enforce that systematic concept of keeping these people locked down, keeping these people poor. And that's what the whole relationship, like, it don't even matter if the police come and throw cookouts in the neighborhood, or, you know, come and give out free book bags or notebooks or pencils to students, to children in the neighborhood, because at the end of the day, you still represent that oppression. You know, you still represent the system. And the system, the whole sociological economic system, is based on, or is centered on, keeping a particular people poor, you know. And if they not trying to offer no jobs, y'all ain't trying to come with no vocational training, y'all not giving money back into the public schools, it's always going to be that conflict. It's always going to be brothers looking at the police, you know, with a grip, with a mean face. And so that's what I think the brother was coming with, you know what I'm saying, as far as the first act of rebellion, because it's all about economic freedom. Just like back in the day, it was all about freedom, but now freedom is in the terms of economics, money. Yeah.
Brother, I want you to hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to come back. We're going to take a break. We're going to play a little bit of music, man, get a people break. We're going to come back in about a minute and a half, and we're going to pick up on that thought, man, and expand on, see if we got some guest callers. Hold up.
Right. Hold up, peace.
Thank you for using GTL.
Everybody put three fingers in the air. The sky's falling, the wind is calling. Stand for something or die in the morning. Section 80, high power. Staring at me, Malcolm X put a hex on my future. Someone catch me. I'm falling victim to a revolutionary song, the Serengeti clone. Back to put you backstabbers back on your spinal bone. You slit your disc when I slit you my dish. You wanted to diss but jumped on my dick. Grown man never should bite their tongue unless you eating pussy that smell like it's a stale plum. I got my finger on the motherfucking pistol, aiming it at a pig. Charlotte's Web is gonna miss you. My issue isn't televising. You ain't gotta tell the wise how to stay on beat, because our life's an instrumental. This is physical and mental. I won't sugarcoat it. You'll die from diabetes if these other niggas wrote it. And everything on TV just a figment of imagination. I don't want them plastic nations. Read that like a Haitian. Why you motherfuckers waiting? I'll be off the slave ship, building pyramids, writing my own hieroglyphs. Just call it shit high power. Nigga, nothing left.
Yeah, do we have any callers?
War on drugs. And the war on drugs that he is launching is in response, supposedly, to a so-called overdose epidemic that's happening in the system. One of the things that always often surprises me is when they, you know, the power structure, the conservative power structure, who is basically the originators of this slogan, war on drugs, they only talk about fighting a war against drugs with criminalization. They never talk about it as far as like therapy and treatment from a sociological perspective, you know, reforming institutions, trying to figure out what exactly is the environmental factors and psychological factors that are causing one to abuse substances. That's never looked at. It's always like, yo, let's attack the drug problem with, you know, incarceration, punishment, policing, law enforcement. Here, they got a policy that they implemented in the visiting room, a draconian policy, man, where if your people come to see you, in order for them to utilize the restroom, they got to go all the way back to the front, use the bathroom, get searched again, just to use the bathroom. And if they use the bathroom more than once, they have to leave. For us, if we use the bathroom, we have to come all the way back to the housing unit to use the bathroom, go back out, get re-strip searched again. It's just a humiliating policy, man. And nowhere in between all of this have they increased drug treatment. They haven't, you know, done any type of individual therapy for the guys who are on the hot sheet, who have failed urinalysis tests. They haven't went around and gave them any psychological evaluations to try to figure out what is the cause of their substance abuse. And so this is one example of some of the conditions that we face as prisoners, where we have to become politically active and politically involved in trying to change the condition, because the condition is repressive. Because ultimately, man, it's been proven that, you know, there are various studies that have shown that increased visitation reduces the chance of recidivism, is better for a prisoner's mental health. And so for them to have this type of policy shows that they are not concerned about those type of things, that they're being reactionary.
Right.
And that, you know, their philosophy is to be punitive over therapeutic, you know what I'm saying? And I wanted to bring that in and make that point, and I just want to kind of get your thoughts on that, man. You know, what do you think about what I told you about the new policy and the philosophy behind those who implemented that policy?
Yeah, no, definitely, most definitely. I appreciate that question. I think from my experiences, and from historical perspective, I think that first and foremost, going back to when you said they never look at the remedial aspects of when it comes to drug problems and remedial situations, I think they do. You know, that's the first thing they do. When it comes to sociology, see, like all of these politicians and so-called leaders we have out here, these Democrat and Republicans who running for presidents or whatever else they run in, they took classes in sociology. So they know the systematic or even the human aspect of falling victim to drugs when it comes to being impoverished, trying to escape reality. They understand these things. But when it comes to these individuals, they are about exploiting this condition in order to make money and also maintain their leverage or maintain their position of power. You understand? This is my perspective. I really truly think that they do not care about the rehabilitation of an individual. They only care about how they can maintain leverage, maintain the foot on a brother's neck, you know? And, That's what history has told me. I may be pessimistic, but they do not care. They know it. That's why they have think tanks. They have think tanks that sit back in these colleges, these elite colleges, man. I'm talking about Duke University, Harvard, Oxford. They sit back and deduce the whole psychological aspect of drug addiction,
drug abuse, but instead of coming with a righteous solution to the problem, what do? Make more laws. They victimize the victim. They criminalize the victim, you understand, in order to make them slaves all over again. You know what I'm saying? It's just a repetition of history. You know, when it comes to the power force or the power structure, they always look at the bottom line. How can we maintain money? We got to understand it, you know. And so when it comes to trying to deal with these people or speak with these people, we always got to attack them where it hurts. And that's always economically, you know, whether it deal with work stoppages, whether it deal with just shutting the system down, nobody work. That's the only thing that get their attention. You know, when it comes to compassion, rarely do they move off that, you know, because they got the information. They know these things, you know, but they don't want to move off that. You know, they like to do the will of their father. And we already know who their father was, you know. You know what I'm saying? Their father was that negative principle.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, one of the challenges to what you're saying, man, is, you know, the prison environment today has become so pathological, man, you know, so many brothers are dealing with mental health issues that are being undiagnosed. You know, it's never been gangster to, you know, to acknowledge that you got mental health issues, you know, so what brother's doing, because brother's stressed out, you know what I mean? Brother's dealing with traumas, various traumas that come from being incarcerated for long periods of time. Next to the state of Florida, people serve longer sentences in Virginia than any other state in the country except Florida. So you got brothers in the state of Virginia serving long, draconian sentences, being warehoused without a lot of therapeutic stimulation, and it's having a psychological impact. It's causing a lot of stress and internal tension. And how guys are remedying it personally is, you know, with the things that they remedy it with on the street: alcohol, you know, hooch, you know, homemade wine with the drugs that are smuggled in. Various coping mechanisms, you know, eating up a bunch of commissary and food, you know, getting overweight, getting high blood pressure. We got over 1,000 people on the compound right now. Roughly 400 people, man, have diabetes, and that's because people are eating themselves into a sickness, man, because they're trying to cope with the oppression. They get bored, they eat sweets, you know what I'm saying? And so with all of that being said, man, you have an environment with so much defeatism and nihilism and just, you know, pessimism. And then you have those of us like me and groups of brothers that are like myself, who are a small minority, who are politicized, who are actively engaged in trying to reform the mind of the prisoner from one of a criminal mentality to that of a revolutionary mentality. But it's a difficult challenge. And the prisoner, and you know, the political prisoner has to function today as one who is scientific. You know what I'm saying? We have to be able to observe. You know, we have to be able to experiment, and we have to be able ultimately to give an evaluation of what we come up with. And what I see is that it's going to be very difficult to get mass organization from the prisoners today, to get work stoppages. It's going to be very difficult to get brothers to do boycotts, because these are the very things they use to cope with their oppression. So for me, I think there has to be a coalition between those of us who are political in the prison, with those of you on the street who are political and who care about ending mass incarceration, who can make the connection between the criminal injustice system and the various other institutions in society that help to repress poor people, black people, who are the poorest group in America. And I think we got to figure out together how it is that we can challenge the power structure and force them to yield to our demands, you know what I mean, to give us justice, to stop with the over-incarceration, with the excessive punishment, the unfair punishment, the abuse. You know, that's my take. But I'm going to ask our switchboard operator, do we have any callers? Okay. I'm assuming that we don't, man. We don't have any guest callers. So moving back into the conversation, Sundiata, are you there, man? Okay, I lost Sundiata.
Hello?
Sundiata.
Hello?
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Okay, Pete. Yeah, so what I want to ask you is, man.
Hold on. Hey, parts up. If we have any callers, you can press 1 to make a comment, statement, or any questions. Any callers out there that's listening?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Keep it moving, bro.
I'm sorry, bro. So moving back into the conversation, I just offered a little bit of my analysis and my solution as to how it is we can begin to work towards criminal justice reform, political prisoners, and prisoners' rights activists out there in society. My question to you is, from somebody who was in the system, able to use the scientific analysis, you know what I'm saying, observe, experiment, evaluate, now going on the street and doing the same thing to the conditions out there, what do you think we as political prisoners that should be concerned about that you all are struggling with out there? You know what I'm saying? Some of your struggles that we should be engaged in that are connected to it. What do you think we should be concerned about, man?
Okay. I think that first and foremost, you're right in your assessment about political prisoners, but there's two types. First and foremost, all of the brothers in prison are political prisoners, but you have the conscious and the unconscious political prisoner. So for the conscious political prisoner, what they should be doing or what they should be concerned about is really staying in touch with individuals in the street who are really about that life and about freedom, justice, and equality. Coming with petitions, getting the individuals in the street to come with petitions, come with mass support to bring these issues to our local senators, delegates, and even all the way to the Supreme Court, to continue that fight, continue to make awareness born, and so the individuals in the street can get in touch with the media. If not the media, you see, because I think, like, nowadays, social media trumps that mass propaganda media that's going on. And I think the social media is our news, or what I call the hood news, because we give it raw. And so now what I'm seeing is, like, the news channels are now going to social media and telling stories about what's going on the social network. So we got a force, and like it's just like the gold rush, like back in the day where everybody went to California to get gold and to attain power, and some people was just poor and they came up, and it's like now each individual got the opportunity to reach a mass majority of individuals with a story and can actually come up, you know. So big companies are falling to the individual, to the poor, to the working man. And so social media or technology is a big thing for us nowadays. So we can use this social media, man, this engine, to promote our causes, you know, to continue to beat them in the head with the information, you know. Get on their pages, get on their timelines, and let them know what's going on. And we have to be relentless. We have to be diligent, steadfast, and if the seed don't spark, at least we planted it in their mental. But the way things is going now, it's like a social change is in the air from what I feel. You know, I feel like there's a social change occurring. You know, everybody is just exhausted with politics, you know what I'm saying? In my opinion, the white man power is collapsing. They fighting amongst themselves. They fighting internally amongst their own groups, whether it's Republican or Democrats. They all are in difference amongst one another. And so what we're seeing, like Elijah Muhammad said, the last straw of the white man is he going to give up his white woman. So now we're seeing Hillary trying to hold the torch. And it's just it's collapsing. And so awareness is being sparked. More people are politicized. Young men and women out here are becoming more militant-minded. You know what I'm saying? And so all we need to do is just continue to guide. Continue to guide. Continue to promote what we need to promote. And continue to work with individuals out here who have that same passion and fire. And we can change some things, man. And it's going to be changed because it was already written, you know? It was already written,
right.
And sometimes
right.
Words.
And I agree with that. I've been recently looking back at you know the Black Panther Party, how many brothers face so much repression, man, as a result of their political activism. You know what I'm saying? Whether it was they was assassinated, like, you know, Fred Hampton, like Fred Hampton, or like his son, Fred Hampton Jr., who was incarcerated, or brothers like Huey, who was incarcerated, or Lumumba Shakur, or Stakehold Dingle, who was just released after 33 years. I think about what you're saying. They're willing to sacrifice their level of militancy, but
what?
You know, civil, during that period of struggle, you know, right now, the way the sanitized version of history teaches us is that, you know, the civil rights movement was the full movement, you know, of social change. But it was a lot of that, a lot of those black power movements, the riots, that militant action in the backdrop, you know what I'm saying, that made the power to compromise with the more moderate, liberal civil rights movement. You know, they weren't really listening to King because he was marching. They were listening to King because behind King, in places like Watts and Detroit and New Jersey, you know what I'm saying, they was burning the cities down. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, indeed.
So they was trying to make a compromise with, you know, with themselves. Like, yo, who is it going to be? We're going to have to either listen to King, or, you know, we're going to have to compromise with people like X. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Exactly.
And I say that to say, not that I'm a proponent of violence, but what I am saying is that we do have to recognize when the enemy is no longer, and I say the enemy is somebody who's repressive, who only cares about property over humanity. You know what I'm saying? That's what makes you an enemy. It's not your race or nothing like that. I'm talking about those who are more concerned about property rights than human rights. You feel what I'm saying? And when our enemies who are more concerned about wealth and capital than they are about human development and human consciousness don't respect the protest, don't respect the marching or the petition, there always has to be the threat. You know what I'm saying? There always has to be another level. But you got to remember, man, that these dudes over here didn't get this country through negotiation. You know what I'm saying? They didn't petition the king for the country. You know what I'm saying? They was able to get I mean, real talk. They didn't boycott for the country. You know what I mean? So we got to always keep in mind that there are certain levels, prices for freedom. And there are certain class levels and socioeconomic groups that ain't going to feel me right now because we're still getting the crumbs of American imperialism. You know what I'm saying? But there's a large segment of us who are suffering.
You have 1 minute remaining.
We're going to play a song real fast, man. We're going to come back on the other side of the break, man. We're going to check and see if we got some callers. Hold up, man.
Word, hold up.
Thank you for using CTL.
I want to dedicate this joint right here. Jonathan Jackson and George Jackson. Peace to those brothers. Want to shout out my man, Sharon the Worm. 80 years. Come on, niggas. Come on, niggas. I just burnt my American flag and sent 3 cracker Nazis to hell, and I'm sad. I'm loading tests in my mag to send these redneck bigots some death in the bag. Choke him out with his Confederate flag. I know these devils are mad. Little rat fans that live way out in safe suburbia, would you stand with me? A United States murderer, huh? Would you testify? You buy my songs. You buy my songs. But will you ride with me? You understand my struggle. That's what you claim, right? Get your aim right and get your game tight. Don't buy my songs, y'all don't roll with it. Coming to concerts singing ho and shit. Fuck y'all little ho bitches. I don't need y'all, I go gold with it. I heard y'all was downloading it. Like I'm y'all man who be exposing shit. Like William Cooper, who told you the pale horse is the future? Would you testify with some realness like that? I think you scared.
Yeah. Okay, so we back. So I want to pick up the conversation, finding out first and foremost, do we have any callers that want to comment or join the conversation? Any callers?
No callers.
Okay, so keeping the conversation moving. True, you know, man, like I told you, they just started this, some of y'all, they just started this real draconian policy, man, on the visitation. And, you know, there's all types of stories in the prison legal news and the Virginia Cure and different places hitting that, bringing, the, you know, the arrival of video visitation. And all over the country, man, they started these video visitation policies where people are no longer able to have human contact with their family, and they have to pay money to be able to see their family members and their loved ones and watch them through a computer screen. Last year, they had this major company called Securus, which is the number one video visitation prison industry in the country, company in the country, attempt to install Securus throughout DOC, but it was shut down after a lot of people protested, some of the prison rights groups out here protesting. Now with this alleged drug epidemic in the prison system, this, you know, war on drugs, you know what I'm saying? I personally just see it as a smokescreen.
That's it.
You know, for a hidden agenda, which is the video visitation, which is, you know, an attempt by the state and people who benefit or invest in these companies to make money, you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
That's what it is. And my thing is, you know, making people out there aware of some of the things that we struggle with like that. So I'm just going to point out a few things for the people real quick before I pass it. I want them to know about some of the conditions we face. Number one, on August 3rd, a guy killed himself on B3, cell 406, a guy named Michael Anderson. I don't want to talk about him as a nameless person because he was a human being. His name was Michael Anderson. All the guys on the
phone. Five me. You said D3, cell 406?
Yeah, cell 406, man. He was in the cell for hours, you know what I'm saying? He was in the cell for hours with the cut on the door, had his door covered up. No officer checked to see if he was okay. His cell partner came in from outside rec, noticed that the cut was up, knew that he had some issues, went to the booth office, told him that he thinks his roommate was in there committing suicide. They was lollygagged around, finally checked after they had already made several rounds. Went in there to see that the brother was dead. He had hung himself from the window. What's crazy and what's unfortunate about the incident is that the brother was known to have mental health issues. He was he was receiving treatment, and he was taking off his medication. He was writing a lot of grievances, from what all of his friends tell me and tell a lot of us. He's writing a lot of grievances. He's challenging the state. He's trying to get back on medication. But Dr. James Thompson, who is the head of the QMPH, the psychological department here, refused to put him back on medication. And so ultimately the consequence of that is that Mike, my man Max, is dead. And so what we have, man, is we have a visitation policy that's repressive. We have a mental health department, man, that just don't give a damn about mental suffering. We have a warden that wants to launch a war on drugs rather than, you know, treat mental health illness that causes, you know, drug use and substance abuse. We have poor food. We have horrible food. We have a prison that doesn't have air conditioning, and the humidity in these pods at times reaches over 100 degrees. But we are forced to run around here with all of our clothes on. We can't take our shirts off because we're getting charged. But we're sitting here sweating bullets. You know what I'm saying? We have to take hot showers.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, every service that they offer us is privatized. The food is horrible, so we have to spend money to eat the decent food. We have to spend money to get medication because the medical department doesn't like to give us quality. You get better medicine. You get better medicine from the commissary than you do from the medical department. You know, the jobs here. The warden is cutting the jobs here in half in the last year and started building a bunch of fences. At a medium security prison. You know, he's trying to turn this into a supermax, but the security level of the prison here is a medium security prison. It hasn't been an escape attempt here in over 25 years. And yet he's building a fence line as if he's preparing for a massive escape attempt sometime soon, even though this is a medium security prison. Most of the guys in this prison are going home. You know, so these are some of the things we're facing, and these are some of the things that people out there don't know about. Poor education, you know, brothers not having access to education. And these are the guys, again, 90% of the prisoners are being sent back into society. So you have brothers like me who are politicized, who are active every day, trying to organize, trying to, you know, educate the brothers, get them actively involved, start campaigns, organizing people in society, communicate the message to you all.
Right.
But we need help. We need help. We need more people to get involved. We need more people to have a concern about the people in here who have become invisible, the people in here who are nameless. You know what I'm saying? And so my question to you, man, with all of that being said, is, you know, why is it that people out there, you know, on average, and maybe I might be wrong, but why does it seem like people out there on average aren't concerned with prisoners' rights struggles, man? You know what I'm saying? Why aren't they concerned with this prisoners' rights struggle?
Yeah, that's a real question, man. It's the same. It's like prison is nothing but a reflection of society. I think Theodore Dostoevsky, a Russian literatist, he wrote in one of his books, he said, in order to understand the civilization of society, you must enter into its prison. And so the civilization of society is very degraded in the prison, and is apathy. There's indifference. There's a lack of regard for humanity, and it's the same thing going on in the streets right now. In the streets right now, in society, so-called free society, pretty much is everybody is so engulfed with their own individual struggle and pursuit of happiness. People are distracted, I should say, bombarded by so many different stimulations from Facebook to Instagram to Twitter to all these other things that they just don't care, man. I mean, and then individuals have become so desensitized to atrocities to where now when they look at the news, it's just like entertainment. You know, we might see, man, 51 people get shot up in a club, killed or hurt or injured, and people just keep on moving, you know, because everybody propelled or pushed or motivated to just try to get them a piece of the green God, get them some of this money, you know, where they feel like they're going to get some happiness, but they don't really realize that if it affect one person, if it affects one person directly, then it affects them indirectly, you know what I'm saying? And all our struggles are interconnected. So I think the only way, I mean, and it might be harsh, but it always been the time-tested solution is to rise, man, to get angry and to really, you know, insert ourselves in a way to where we are heard, you know, to make headlines, you know what I'm saying? Because that's, you know what I'm saying? And the people are so blind and deaf. They're not hearing it. They grab dumb and blind. They can't speak the truth. They can't see the truth. They can't hear the truth, you know, until it's an explosion. And that's when they wake up, man. And that's how I've been at Attica. That's how I've been at San Quentin. That's how I've been at all these spots, you know, where prison rights was made born, you know. It came through some noise being made, and it's the same way out here for real. When it comes to Black Lives Matter, we've been saying it, we marching it, we telling people, but the only reason when they want to start to come with a conversation about it is after people get hurt, you know, after we start striking back, and That's just the way of the world right now, unfortunately. You know,
well,
maybe we could come
well,
with some other way.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said maybe
I'm
if
sorry,
we continue to just if we protest and continue to push paper, and we could maybe get our voice heard. You know what I'm saying? And hopefully that's the way we got to do it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah.
Well, that's all to try to persuade immoral people to reason with morality. You know what I'm saying? So we're talking about the people who enslave people, and you know, and I'm talking about white racist, capitalist individuals, and you know, as we know, I always want to qualify this because things can be confused and conflated very easily. But when I speak of white supremacists and white racist capitalists, I'm not saying every single white person, because there are a lot of white people who are organized with behind the wall. There are a lot of white people who are organized with who are not behind the wall. And every white person is not racist. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of great white people out there, people from European descent, who are great supporters of the movement. But they are those who are white supremacists who are and have continued to try to promote white nationalism. There's a lot of blacks who indirectly, through their lack of consciousness, also support the white supremacy state. And I think what you're trying to say is basically as long as they are on the path to world domination, you can't attempt to try to reason with them morally because their objectives aren't moral. And
right.
I think I agree
exactly.
with that. And I think what we have to come into the realization of is a more critical analysis of what the problem is, the social conditions as they exist, and a scientific analysis. We need to stop being dogmatic. You know, it's
yeah.
not just a racial struggle, it's a class struggle. It's a gender struggle. It's a
right.
lot of different issues, man. We also have to understand that ain't no mystery God going to save us. And I know it hurts a lot of people to hear me say that, but, you know, faith without works is dead. Am I saying that one should not have their faith in the Creator? No, we're going to need the support of the universe and the energy and the divine spirit. So we're going to have to put that
That's
work
right.
in. We're going to have to activate that God consciousness within ourselves, and we're going to have to fight to bring some justice to this injustice. And people have to begin to see the prison not as a secluded extension of America, but something very active and very real part of America. I am an American too. My indivisible, nameless self. I am an American too. And if this can happen to me, this can happen to you. Well, you know, what's crazy is I was reading Blood in My Eye, in the preface, they were talking about something Jonathan Jackson said. Rest in peace to Jonathan Jackson, who died today in the Marion County Rebellion. But Jonathan Jackson, George Jackson's little brother, was dating a girl who really liked him, and he was 17 years old at the time, and he was very serious about the struggle. He was very serious about revolution and trying to get his brother out of prison. And one time, Jonathan said in the letter to George, he said, man, the girl asks me all the time, man, why the hell am I so serious? You know what I'm saying? She's like, you know, I like you a lot, but she's like, you're getting more and more serious, and I just can't understand, you know, how to deal with you, because every time I'm around you, all you want to talk about is your brother and what's going on with his struggle. And she was saying that, you know, basically he was consumed with the prisoner's rights struggle out there. Well, Jonathan's response to that was, well, how would you feel if it was your brother? How would you feel if it was your brother? And I think what we got to get the people out there to understand is that none of us, as long as we are in America, are exempt from American oppression. Everybody in prison ain't guilty. And just because you committed the crime don't mean that you committed all of the crimes that you were convicted of. We have what you call prosecutorial discretion, where you have a lot of people who are pleading because of fear to crimes they did not commit. And because of this fear,
right.
they're basically locked up for crimes, even though they pleaded that they did not commit. So if you
right.
come, if the system itself is not designed to rehabilitate, if it's a repressive system, if it's causing people to become pathological, you know what I'm saying, and it's criminogenic, anything can happen. There are people in here, man, who used to be bankers. I'm around people, man, who were very, very productive citizens. Every person in the prison wasn't from the ghetto. Every person
right.
in the prison, man, wasn't, you know what I'm saying, wasn't a drug dealer.
Right.
You got people, man,
That's
who were
right.
police officers, who were psychologists, who were teachers, who are now doing 20 and 30 year prison sentences, some innocent, some not.
Right.
You dig what I'm saying? So everybody needs
That's
to
right.
be concerned about a justice system where we kill innocent people. People die on death row every day. That's innocent. That could be you. And this is why I think that people need to pay more attention to the system. I wanna close out real fast, and I'm gonna give you another word. But I wanna close out real fast by reading a piece from Leon Bujimong.
You got the sister tough nut to want to add on too.
Yes sir.
Okay. Yes sir. Hotep. Hotep. All right. I just wanted to add on when you were asking about why more people don't get involved out here. And I think that a lot of people are confused about the difference between what term human rights are and what rights that prisoners are supposed to have. And they don't understand
yeah.
that everybody is entitled to have these human rights. You know what I'm saying? And like you were saying, the statistics basically show that 2.3% out of 5% of all prisoners are innocent, you know, and that most of those prisoners are black. Which I find
wow.
is crazy, you know? But
yeah.
I think that the biggest issue is that prisoners are stereotyped to be their crimes. You're not people in there. You're killers and robbers and whatever else crimes you committed. And that's how you're depicted to the government, because the media portrays you as such horrible people that when you go to somebody and if you mention the word prison, they just automatically get fancy about it, and they get scared, and they think that they're supporting a crime, and they're not understanding the conditions that y'all are living under. And that's why I think it's a need for it to be put out there, because people, a lot of people just aren't aware. You know what I'm saying? Because knowledge is power. Yeah. And when you have no clue as to what's going on, and you thinking, you know, I tell people all the time, I say, you know, you the same way if you think these cops and stuff is out here killing people today and shooting people dead, what you think is going on in the prison where they ain't got no cell phones or nobody to run up and record and yell stop? You know? And that's just real.
We appreciate that, Tesla. That's great analysis. That's right in the Zach. And real fast, we got about 3 minutes left. I'm going to read this little piece from Mumia. He said August, a month of injustice and divine justice, of repression and righteous rebellion, of individual and collective effort to free the slaves and break the chains that bind us. He said August saw slaves and the grandsons of slaves strike out for their God-given right to freedom, as well as the awesome price, the ultimate price, always paid by those who would dare oppose the slave master's will, like their spiritual grandfather, the blessed rebel Nat Turner. Those who have opposed Massa in this land of unfreedom have met murder by the state, George and Jonathan Jackson, James McClain, William Christmas, Bobby Hutt, Steve Bartholomew, Robert Lawrence, Tommy Lewis, Sylvester Bell, and suffered the fate of Nat Turner of the slave daring to fight the slave master for his freedom. With that being said, man, you know, I just want everybody to know that Black August is about us and our struggle for human rights and dignity, man. And even though some of us have committed a crime, we deserve a right. We deserve the right, you know what I'm saying, to be treated like individual human beings and the right to being judged justly as individuals, as human beings, and not as property or not as, you know, otherized as a thing, you know what I'm saying, nameless, indivisible people, you know what I'm saying? That's what I want to say. True Son, you got anything you want to say, last couple words, man? You got like 2 minutes left.
Yeah, I also want to say that for everybody listening or everybody who see this post on Facebook, really sit back and listen and strive to get an understanding of what we're saying, because it could be you behind walls, man. It could be your family behind walls. And when you're behind walls, you don't have a voice. So to hear the voice of the voiceless, you know, really take heed and strive to do something to help these brothers, man, because it's rough behind there. And the human rights, man, are being trampled upon. So it's important for us to really come together and really strive.
1 minute remaining. Cool.
Really strive to change these laws that's oppressing us. You know, that's what I want to say. Peace.
What's up, everybody, man? We love y'all. Thanks for supporting us, Scarry Donso and Sundiata. We got a lot going on. Stay on our Facebook page. It's True Son, Scarry Donso, Prison Lives Matter, Operation Wake Up. We'll be back with you next week, man. Celebrate Black August by resisting oppression. Remember, man, the first step forward is traveling back to the past and getting that knowledge, man. We love y'all. Hotep, okay. Your whole room.
Hoo-hoo.
Thank you for using GPL.
You're not using your brain. That's what the white man wants you to do. Look at you. What makes you ashamed of being black?
Number love for you. You know how hard it is. No doubt. Being a woman, a black woman at that, in this white man's world, sometimes we overlook the fact that we can ride hard in our fix. We don't be knowing the pain we can cause. This white man's world. This white man's world. I ain't saying I'm innocent at all. In this white man's world, it's on. Yeah. For all those times that I messed up, but we messed up.
Dear sister, got me twisted up in prison. I miss you. Crying, looking at my nieces and my nephews' picture. They say don't let this cruel world get you. Kind of suspicious, swearing one day you might leave me for somebody that's richer. Twist the cap off the bottom. I take a sip and see tomorrow. Gotta make it if I have to beg a bottle. Beating love letters late night. Locked down and quiet. Your brothers don't receive their mail. Best believe we ride. Eating Jack Mack, staring at